Good afternoon, morning, evening, whatever it is. I'm Chase Cunningham, Dr. Cunningham, if you want to be formal, also known as Dr. Zero Trust. Let's get into the space because it was crazy. So quickly, I spent the last couple of weeks, which is why this is a weekly-ish thing, bouncing around the country doing ZT work with a bunch of different organizations. One of those would be the National Motor Freight Truck Association, NMFTA, which they were kind enough to have me visit. So thank you very much for that. But I will say after probably halfway through day one, we were kind of at the waterboarding session of PowerPoint. I mean, the things in this were very basic, which is fine. But I don't know how many times we got to tell people, like, click and phishing and bad passwords and micro seg and those types of things. Like, they're very, very valuable. I actually counted up the number of times during the day that we heard the same words. I heard, let me look at my notes here. I heard phishing 61 times one day. I heard bad passwords 73 times. I heard access control 44 times. I mean, I don't know how many times you can beat the horse to death and then burn the carcass and then pave over the ashes, but that's pretty much what went on. So yeah. If you're not clear on what is going on in the cybersecurity world, just do some research. It ain't rocket science to figure out where this stuff is coming from and what you should do to minimize your risk. So that's, yeah. Anyway, let's move on. So, interesting stuff going on in Meta's world. States, this is in NPR, states sue Meta claiming Instagram, Facebook fueled youth mental health crisis. This is by Bobby Allen. A group of more than 40 states sued Meta on Tuesday, accusing the social media giant of designing products that are deliberately addictive and fuel the youth mental health crisis. The legal actions allege that Meta has deceived the public about the harms of Facebook and Instagram, which the Attorney General say exploit and manipulate children. Some observers are likening the litigation to lawsuits of the 90s against big tobacco that imposed new limits on tobacco industry marketing. If you're my age, you remember when all that was going down. Jean Twenge, I don't know, a professor of psychology at San Diego State University, said she hopes the suit forces Meta to enact similar changes. Good luck with that. More than 30 states have joined a federal suit with Arizona, New York, West Virginia, and others against Meta. Other attorney generals, including Tennessee, Washington, D.C., filed similar actions on Tuesday of last week in state courts. More than 40 states paint a picture of a company that brushed aside safety concerns about its products in order to addict as many young people as possible as a way of juicing its profits, like every other profit company for profit has done in the history of companies. The authorities say Meta's dopamine-manipulating features have poisoned an entire generation's mental health, citing a recommendation algorithm that determines what people see when they log into Instagram and Facebook, the ability to like, post, and scroll without limits. So social media companies, however, are typically held immune from being legally responsible for content generated by users under a law known as Section 230 that has protected the tech industry for decades. Legal experts say Meta is likely to invoke 230 as part of its defense, but state prosecutors have crafted the suits with hopes of working around the law. So there's a whole bunch of stuff here, and like I do, I'll put the links to this or whatever in your in the thing. But I mean, here's the actual takeaway. If they're your children and you're providing them with a device that you paid for with your money, here's a really simple fix to this. Take it away. My kids have chores to do. And they've been told repeatedly that they can't get sucked into VR and whatever else and ignore their chores and things like that. And they do have limits on it. Recently, they didn't get things done when they were supposed to. Guess what? The VR goes away. If their grades suffer, the phone goes away. If they don't respond when I ask them to do things, the phone goes away. Like, you, I agree that there is definitely some, you know, larger things to solve here within the bigger industry side of this. And I'm glad to see that there's some legislators getting involved. But I mean, as parents, we don't get to absolve ourselves of the responsibility of kids with technology. Take that shit away. You're the one providing it for them. I mean, if in nothing else, turn off their internet. I do that all the time. If you've got a decent router and firewall system set up and most of your providers, Comcast and Verizon, whoever else, you can turn it off to specific devices. If you're not familiar with how to do that, go look it up. I mean, this is good, but just like when I was a kid, if my mother had caught me with cigarettes, she would have beat my ass. Oh, but first, she would have taken the cigarettes away. I'm not saying beat your kids, for the record, although there's plenty of kids that could probably use a good whooping, but you're the parent, so take that stuff away. You can do that. Just everybody be aware, we're still the parents. We can take things away from children up until they're 18. As far as I know, the way it works in the Cunningham household is if you ain't paying for it, you don't own it. And if I'm paying for it, I can damn sure take it away. So, yeah, I mean, will this ever go further with the Meta thing? I don't know. If you remember, though, they did do this whole marketing deal and that changed the way they marketed. But guess what? They just came up with vapes, and vapes were taken by kids all over the place everywhere else. So how well will this work in a digital space? There's an article in Dark Reading from Asif Kochan, who I think is correct, says co-founder and president of Sintra, former commander of Unit 8200. So the guy definitely knows his stuff. It's time to establish the NATO of cybersecurity. I don't know about that. Cybersecurity is already operating across borders. Nations must do the same to protect their critical infrastructure. So he's talking about national security agencies and intelligence agencies are focused elsewhere. Cybercrime is a central threat in cyberspace. To effectively combat it, nation states must recognize the harm it can do and take proactive steps to lay the foundation for an international alliance for cybersecurity. Think of it as the NATO of cybersecurity. There's a bunch of breakdowns in here, and honestly, I agree with this argument. However, maybe because he was at 8200 or whatever, like, you're not necessarily too intimately familiar with how effective NATO is at what it does. So, like, look at the UN and NATO and whatever. And I mean, anytime we try and collaborate across national borders and boundaries, it's a clusterfuck of the highest proportion. So I think this is a good idea, but how operational is it actually? Probably not very. I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong. Put stuff in the comments, say what you want to say, whatever. But I don't see how this is something that is actually going to do much good. We already have a lot of international agreements. We have extradition treaties. We have all kinds of things, but it hasn't made a lick of difference. Putting another ineffective, probably, and exceptionally bureaucratic organization, look at the shit that NATO does, won't make things that much better, that much faster. So good idea and a valid argument, and I applaud the willingness to put it into the market, but is it going to be doable? I don't think so. And does it actually make much difference? Flashpoint publishes a lot of really good stuff. They published their Cyber Threat Intelligence Index for Q3. Go look at this stuff. It's really solid, actually. The research they do is good. Relatively short as well. Vulnerabilities, 7,373 vulnerabilities disclosed. About 1,200 without a CVE. 2,752 higher critical vulnerabilities so far this year. 2,403 of those have a public exploit, so problems. Interesting stuff. Malware IOCs, quick overview, most of them privilege escalation, application stuff. And then you can also go back and look at the data breach side, which gives you interest on where's what. So most of it obviously is ransomware. Manufacturing is picking up speed. So look at this stuff. It's worth it. These people are doing good research. Insider threat is interesting too. And with that, I wanted to kind of go into quickly the insider threat stuff as far as this article in, that was published about the NSA guy who ran off with state secrets. So this is in PC Mag. I posted this on LinkedIn. Jared Sebastian Dalky tried to email classified information to someone he thought was a Russian agent for $85,000, but he was actually talking to an undercover FBI agent. This is by Michael Kahn. This is a pretty common tactic that happens with the FBI looking for morons. A former National Security Agency employee pled guilty for trying to email state secrets to a Russian agent. This guy's 31 years old, of Colorado, originally served as an information system security designer at NSA's Fort Meade, Maryland last year. According to the Justice Department, and they have the link in here to the actual charge, used an encrypted email account to transmit excerpts of three classified documents to an individual he believed to be a Russian agent. However, it was an FBI agent undercover. He asked for $85,000 in return for all the information in his possession. Dalkey claimed in an email the information would be of value to Russia and told the FBI online undercover operative that he would share more information when he returned to D.C. Pled guilty, plea agreement, served in the U.S. Army, bachelor's degree in cybersecurity, hired by the NSA, but resigned 3 weeks after that when he became a civilian, so that's interesting. After the agency denied his request for a 9-month leave to help a family member with a medical condition. So, okay. Then he reapplied to work at NSA. It was accepted as a new position, which was originally supposed to have started September 28th of 2022. But something else happened there. And in his communication with the FBI, Dalk, also mentioned that he specifically joined the NSA to undermine the U.S. government. So the plea agreement notes that he put in for the position he was currently assigned to because he had, quote, questioned America's role to the world in the past and by a mixture of curiosity for secrets and a desire to cause change. So on the insider threat thing, like here's the takeaway, and I'll talk about one other insider threat thing in a second too, but this is where, like, it's okay for the purposes of safety, security, national security to put together the picture of individuals who are doing things that are potentially risky for those operational sides of it. Like, if this individual was ex-Army, okay, cool. Let's look at his service record, which I'm sure they did because he had a clearance. Okay, so maybe there's some stuff in there. He asked for leave for 9 months after just being hired for a family medical situation. And when it was denied, he just quit. That's interesting as well. By the way, he reapplied and then was rehired. And I would say that none of this stuff never happens in a vacuum. Like, for this individual to go out there and say the things that he said to this, you know, undercover Russian operative, he probably said stuff on like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram or whatever about his feelings towards the United States and the NSA and et cetera. I would be shocked if there hadn't been something else that had been put out there that wasn't indicative of his thinking and feelings about the United States. And that would have helped put together a picture about this individual. I would also wonder, like, how much correlation there is. He asked for 85 grand. Is there something that occurred in his finances recently that he needed 85 G's to pay for? That's a pretty specific number. And honestly, if you're going to sell out your country for less than 100K, I mean, that's a pretty specific thing. So, like, it's valuable to look at the whole person and be able to get the context so that you can apply controls. Let's also talk quickly about the dude that tried to crash an Alaska Airlines jetliner. This individual has been a pilot for quite a while. He's been dealing with depression, apparently, and somewhere along the lines in his treatment for depression, somebody said, dude, you should take some magic mushrooms. It'll alleviate the depression symptoms. Apparently, he had never done this before, but for some reason, he decided to do it like around the time he was going to be flying because he deadheaded and had to get on a plane to go back to wherever he came from. And while he was sitting in the jump seat in the cockpit, he just tries to shut off fuel to the engines because he's tripping balls. So, like, again, this individual is doing something, is working in a space where he should be closely monitored for a whole lot of reasons. The moment someone is flying airplanes or national security or whatever else, and they start having issues with mental health, which I'll be perfectly overt and honest, like, I've had depression problems. And I wouldn't have any problem with someone pulling my clearance if it was to that level. But you seek help, you get medication, you do those things. If they're at this issue and they're facing it this way and they're doing things that are outside the bounds of known medical treatment, whatever else, tripping balls on mushrooms and things like that, they shouldn't be flying an airplane. They shouldn't be sitting in the cockpit where they can do those types of things. pull them off. I don't know if you remember, but there was an issue about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, where a guy in Germany, I think it was, who was flying for one of the big airlines over there, had long-term history of depression, long-term history of mental health treatments and whatever else, decided to just crash the plane with like 150 something people on board, because why just take yourself out? It's okay, in my opinion, and these are just my opinions from past experience, like looking at the whole person and not being draconian about it, but number one, trying to help those individuals as much as you can. But number two, if they're going to be in a place where they have access to national secrets or aircraft or exceptionally dangerous to human safety and life type of things, pull them off of it, take it away, get them help. But don't allow them to just do it because you're worried about hurting their feelings or whatever else. It's unsafe. I would guarantee that the 83 people on the plane for that Alaska Airlines plane are thankful that somebody acted and did something about it instead of being, you know, crashing to their death. Yeah, it's there's some crazy stuff going on here. There's an article in Recorded Future, super interesting stuff. Hamas application infrastructure reveals possible overlap with Tag 63 and Iranian threat activity. So if you're looking for the ties between those that bind, here you go. Recorded Future's research group, NSICT group, has identified an application disseminated on Telegram used by members and supporters of the Hamas terrorist organization. The application is configured to communicate with Hamas's Izz-ad-Din al-Qassam Brigade's website. Infrastructure analysis associated with the website led to the identification of a cluster of domains that mimic the domain registration tradecraft of Tag 63, which is APT-C-23. This, again, back to the whole thing about naming all these damn groups. A cyber group that we believe operates at the behest of the Hamas. We absorbed this Recorded Future that these domains were interconnected via Google Analytics code. Furthermore, a domain associated with a cluster hosted a website that spoofs the World Organization Against Torture. Don't know what that is. Again, based on domain registration patterns, we observed a likely Iran nexus to that domain. It is likely, and if you've ever read intelligence briefs, like you hear these terms likely a lot, it is likely that the newly identified domains were operated by threat actors that shared an organizational or ideological affiliation with the Qassam Brigades. Yeah. So know that this is worth reading. There's a really long breakdown on this, totally worth getting into and understanding what's going on there. A couple of other pieces that are worth looking at. Let's make sure that we talk about the small business survey that was recently done by ITRC. This is a good one to read through just for the perspective of small businesses not have the same problems that big businesses do, obviously, duh. But if you ask them, you know, the survey, they got, I think it was 5,000 responses. Here's the tagline is, once upon a time, it was true that small businesses and entrepreneurs were not a favorite target for cyber criminals. Attackers tended to go for larger data-rich organizations, blah, blah, blah. That is no longer the case. So basically, the whole trend is now they're starting to go for small business. And there's a statistic they give in here. 2021 attacks on SMBs were about 58%. 2022, for some reason, it dropped down to 43%. But now, 2023, to that same metric, it's up to 75%, 73, 74, 75%. So it's trending in the wrong direction if you're a small business. Let's see, the number of folks that had come through was pretty substantial, but here's where the reality of it is. So most of it, nearly 20%, is phishing. Third-party vendors, though, are also part of the problem at a 24th percentile. Remote workers within that sort of infrastructure are about 21%. 50% of small businesses surveyed reported taking steps to prevent future breaches, which is good. But when they asked them about what they were doing, they just kind of said more cybersecurity. Wasn't a lot of specificity on what they were doing and what their actual controls are. it looks like the majority of them have bought cyber insurance, which obviously they're not listening to this podcast because I could have saved them a bunch of money, but it is what it is. So that's an interesting report to go look at, worth your time. There's another report. This is the State of Software Supply Chain by Sonatype. And quickly getting into it, there's a stat that stands out. So here's their data. So 1 in 8 open source downloads have known risk associated with it. Ouch. 245,000 malicious packages are available on GitHub. 18.6% of open source projects across Java and JavaScript are no longer maintained, meaning they are no longer serviced and there's potential vulnerabilities there. 135% increase in the adoption of AI and ML software components within environments over the last year. Basically, people using AI-ish or large language modeling things to write software and then putting it into production environments. 135% increase. Yeah, so this one's totally worth looking at if you're into software and those types of things. And then there's a good report from Microsoft on their particular insights of what goes on. So here's the breakdown, though, and they looked at, let me make sure I have this right, 65 trillion signals are synthesized daily, so lots of data, 300 plus threat actor groups, 100,000 domains plus 15,000 partners in their security ecosystem, and 135 million managed devices. So Microsoft, for all their whatever, is big enough that if you take this data and look at it, you should say that this is pretty valuable information. Now, fundamentals of cyber hygiene. How much will that apply to fix or help an organization? 99%. Basic security hygiene still protects against 99% of attacks. So you don't need some crazy, super cool fucking whatever it is that you buy from whoever. Do the basics first to solve a 99% problem. Here you go. This is what they literally say. I'll make sure that I post all this stuff on the session so that you guys can catch up with it. So enable multi-factor. Okay, cool. Apply zero trust principles. Sure. Use XDR. Okay, don't disagree with that. Keep your software up to date. Sure. And then that's kind of the role of it. It says protect data, but then again, what is data and where does it live? That one's a little bit difficult. I would be remiss not to say that I think they also should say you should use like browser isolation, because you can't count on people not to get phished. Don't do that. In my opinion, I would stack this up and I would say, number one, browser isolation, remote browser stuff, whatever. Number two, MFA. Number three, ZT principles, because there you go. Number four, endpoint XDR. Number five, patching your stuff. Number six, segment isolate, those types of things. But that's just me. How effective is MFA at deterring cyber attacks? A recent study based on real-world attack data found that MFA reduces the risk of compromise by 99.2%. And look, I get it. Somebody's going to say, well, data is data and somebody can manipulate data and whatever else. Yeah, but I mean, when you're dealing with that much information and they are, you know, the global leader in software and, you know, all these other things, at least take it as, hey, that's a good idea. Derp. Like, if someone comes to you and they tell you that they've looked at millions of potential results and there's a trend that occurs, follow that trend. Yeah, you can be suspicious of it and whatever, but these are the basics, though. These are super basics. Like, there's other things that you would do, absolutely, 100%. But, like, if you're trying to solve for a large percentage of the problem, and it's probably not 99%. It's probably slightly less than that because, you know, everybody gooses their numbers somewhere somehow. But here's a study that I looked at that was useful that'll give some context. I looked at, you remember when you used to go to the gas station and you just got your gas and left? Fraud was rampant in that industry because anybody could get your card, go get your shit and get some gas and drive off. Well, a few years ago, they implemented the having to put in either a PIN code or your zip code that synced up with the credit card. The numbers that I saw from that particular study said that they dropped in fraud on that particular vector by something like 88% in 30 days. And this was something that had been going on for decades, from whenever they started doing just credit card at gas pumps. it's real simple. Like if you're going to do the basics, it does make a difference. You want to talk about being simple. Look at who gets their house robbed. It's typically not people that have German Shepherds, Rottweilers, and Doberman. Why? Because nobody wants to risk robbing a house that has a big, mean-looking fucking dog. Even if the Rottweiler is the biggest, softy, whatever, all they got to do is bark, show their teeth, and get their haunches up, and people change their mind. And that's a very basic thing. So, you know, these basics make a lot of difference. In cyber, it's kind of the same thing. Is this all-encompassing? Absolutely not. Is this the absolute perfect prescription? No. Is it a great way to be harder as a target than a lot of folks? Yep. Like I said, I was at that NMFTA event, and after all day long of being waterboarded with PowerPoints about fucking passwords and phishing and whatever else, at the end of the day, what was the takeaway? Do multi-factor, don't click on phishing links, whatever. However, I will say openly, I told the folks that were in my particular track, don't rely on people not to be people. Don't work or don't lean on phishing training to keep things safe and secure. Put a technology in front of folks. I think that browser isolation as a general solution has a lot of value. That's just me. So there's that. If you have not seen this article on the DoD is beginning to really evaluate what's going on with Zero Trust across the entire organization, check this out. It's on Signal from AFSEA. It's pretty good because they talk about what's going on. So let's see, make sure that this is actually correct. So by the end of the month, this month, October, we're expecting 47 implementation plans coming to us. This is to the ZT program office. Those documents are explaining how those agencies are going to target Zero Trust on 100% of their .mil domains on Nipper and Zipper. And this is Randy Resnick, the guy running the programs, talking about. Following the initial reviews, the department will give a thumbs up for implementation plans that are there, and then we'll monitor progress in the coming years, not months, years, with the goal of achieving ZT by 2027. So that's good. 4 years. That makes sense. We're going to hold quarterly updates. Oh, imagine that. Measure progress. With each one of those 47, we're going to report stats through our chain of command to the CIO of the U.S. government and ultimately probably to the Deputy Secretary of Defense. Hurrah, hooray, there you go. I mean, there the data that we should use for this stuff is not incredibly hard to find. I know I've published plenty of stuff about it. A lot of smarter people and a lot smarter folks than I, that's what I meant to say, have done the same thing. Go look at the data and follow the trends and then start putting controls in place. And then look at the organizations that are doing strategic implementations of a big time project like ZT, like Google, like the government, and follow along and see how you can do those things and you'll get better. Did the DoD say, even though they've allocated $2 billion to this, that they're going to have it done by January 1? Nope. 2027. And honestly, I'll guarantee you right now, it's not going to be October 1 of 2027. It'll stretch out longer than that because that's just how things go in the government. By the time you get the Beltway Bandits and all the other bullshit that goes on, it stretches out. But the point is they're moving towards ZT and they are, you know, getting better at things. You can too. Literally, that's, you know, you can. I mean, any program, any project, any strategy takes time. And the further you are dug into your current instance, the longer it will take you to get towards that future state. It's just the physics of the problem. It ain't rocket surgery, as I like to say. That's like rocket science and brain surgery combined together. That would be kind of interesting to see somebody do brain surgery on a rocket. Or, yeah, anyway. I'm rambling because I'm brain dead from traveling so much, but it is what it is. As always, if I can help somebody with something, please let me know. I will put the links to this stuff. I will put a link to the $10 Amazon gift card that G2 will give you if you review some software. It's 10 bucks, folks. And I didn't really think about this before, but maybe if you've got like five products that you use and you review those five times, maybe you could get 50 bucks. I'm not saying that you could, but possibly. The sort of breaking the system mentality in me thinks that that's possible. Wink, wink. Anyway, yeah. So coming up on 30 minutes. As always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I'll catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.